This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. These days, wars are fought before our eyes. The 24-hour news cycle, along with up-to-the-second blog posts and Twitter feeds, tell us what's happening on the ground. Well, that wasn't so in 1861. At the start of the American Civil War, there were only newspapers. And while some journalists did file reports from army camps, their access to information was essentially limited to what they learned from commanding officers. The experience of the Civil War print reporter interested Frank Fee. He's a longtime journalist and associate professor of journalism and mass communications at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He and a team of students at UNC have been examining how the Civil War was covered in the print media, and they've studied how the devastation of a lengthy war influenced media production in the Civil War era. Frank Fee and two of his students are my guests on the program today. Frank, Katie Ford Smith, and Jessica Hayes. Thanks to all of you for being here. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks for having us. Thank you.
Frank, I want to start with you. Give us an overall sense of how people consumed news during the Civil War.
Well, media dependency was really at its almost zenith in a way. People used newspapers, magazines, and it was a time and came sort of at the end of a golden age of literacy in America. There was a high high value placed on reading, and a study done over in Rocky Mount in, of the postal records of 1860 showed that people over there were getting two or three or more publications by mail every week, every month. And we can reasonably assume that in the college community of Chapel Hill, a similar level of reading was going on. So these were days when heightened concern, there were big questions to be answered, and the of course, once the war broke out, it was, you know, they had family, friends all over the battlefront, and so it was really important.
So there's already a pretty good interest in media. Did it spike during the Civil War, Katie?
Most definitely. You do find that national news became a local concern and calling into question, you know, seceding from the Union. Really, people had a lot to say about the issue. And during the Civil War, were most concerned about how they were affected. And you did find that in the papers. The demand for news spiked.
Jessica, how was the profession different than it is today, journalism?
Well, there were a lot less resources. You had reporters that had to get news from other sources, such as other newspapers. They might even look to the northern newspapers for information that they couldn't get themselves in the South.
So it's a little bit different profession, but we're seeing an increase in the interest in news, and of course the technology is changing. Frank Fee, tell us a little bit about this project. What's behind it?
Well, the project came along a wonderful moment. I was preparing for a media history course that I was going to teach in the fall, and this was over the past summer. And at that time, I got a query from the folks in Wilson Library saying, what did I know about the transmission of news in the South during the Civil War? And I had to confess that this is not my major research area, and so I could give them an idea. But I said, I'm looking for a real project for my students, and I'm tired of the term paper model. I want to have real history being researched and written. And would they be interested in having my class answer their question? And the answer was yes. And what it led to was, among other things, the Wilson Library people kicked off in February an exhibit, Homefront on the Hill, which looks at life in Chapel Hill during the war. And my class contributed a cabinet, essentially, in the exhibit that looked particularly at media. And so it was a marvelous opportunity that has paid great dividends.
So what kinds of things do you learn, Katie? I'm assuming you knew a little bit about the Civil War before you went to college. Now you're there.
Right.
And now you're taking a look at it through the lens of newspapers. Does it look different to you?
Right. Well, as a student in the School of Journalism, you know, we are all of this generation of a digital age. We grew up with cell phones and the internet, and walking into Professor Fee's class and he asking us, you know, here we are, you're going to start digging into microfilm. And we're like, what is microfilm? You know, we had lectures the first couple of weeks just on how to use primary sources, how to, you know, correctly assess what you learn from primary sources of the Civil War era. So it was a lot about taking on a new perspective. Man. And looking through the press from the eyes of a Civil War citizen in Orange County during that time.
Jessica, give us a sense of how the technology had changed in newspapers. I mean, let's compare that to what might have been available in the Revolutionary War. How had things changed in terms of technology? Frank, can you give us an idea?
Yeah, well, one of the things that happened, I mentioned the steam press a couple of minutes ago. Certainly, we'd gone to a process that was able to produce newspapers very much more quickly. And along with that comes a division of labor. And so you don't have the old master-apprentice artisan model where it's a one person does everything kind of thing. And as you go into the period building up to the Civil War, there are divisions of labor in terms of production, and it's separated from the content of the news content. They've gone from through a period which is known as the party press or political press, where the parties, political parties, were using the press to primarily advance their own models, their own ideas. And you're starting to see a press that is more given to essentially a business model, a profit model. With the Civil War, one of the technological changes that occurs, and it's not a mechanical technological change, but reporting changes. And you actually have a greater emphasis on the reporter as a part of the process that you didn't have before. It's not the editor doing it all.
So you're going out, you're getting the news. And, of course, photography is new to this.
Photography is new. It's basically a medium that at that point is an exhibition medium, if you will. Matthew Brady, the famous photographer, had a studio in New York that was a gallery and was wildly popular in the late 1850s into the 1860s. And he and teams of his employees went out into the battle zones and left a pretty good photographic record. Now, the one thing we have to say is that photography was not so advanced that you could handle a lot of action. So everybody is just standing ramrod stiff, or in many of the cases, some of his most famous work, they're dead bodies on a field. But photography is there, and people are getting interested in the images. And the war, of course, also spurs a tremendous interest in Leslie's Illustrated News and Harper's Weekly, where they're getting very graphic sketches and drawings. And artists like Winslow Homer are on the battlefield for these magazines.
And what kinds of stories, Jessica, are appearing in these newspapers? Give us a range of the type of stories.
Sure. Aside from news of war, there was lots of information about how people reacted to the changes that the war inspired, not only in as far as the soldiers mm-hmm. were concerned, but also the economy, politics was a big topic, religion, slavery.
So it's interesting. Here in North Carolina, we know this was a divisive war. There was practically a civil war within the state over first whether to secede. And then how did things happen? Because we know there was a fairly robust debate before the Civil War about secession. Once North Carolina was part of it, can you tell from the papers whether people had kind of circled up and supported the war initially? Is there any way to know that?
Initially, as you say, there had been leading up to the war, there had been a lot of debate in the press. The editor in Raleigh, William Woods Holden, who's back in the news today, was one of those who was holding out and saying that secession would be wrong. He was not anti-slavery by any means, but and he certainly didn't like Abraham Lincoln, but he did feel that there was a lot to be lost and not too much to be gained by seceding. And other editors around the state, E.J. Hale at the Fayetteville Observer, had similar opinions, and one of the deans of the business, Dennis Hart in Hillsboro, the editor of the Hillsboro Recorder, also were right up to the outbreak of the war, were saying we shouldn't be doing this. Now, and they don't really change that much at the firing on Fort Sumter. What changes things is when Lincoln calls out the federal troops, and then all of a sudden now the state secedes at the end of May of 61. And at that point, there's a loyal, cohesive press.
This would fall apart. Everybody gets behind the war.
Right? Right. It would fall apart in a couple of years. But for the moment, at least, it was a united press.
On the state of things today, we're talking about news coverage of the Civil War during the Civil War. My guests are UNC journalism professor Frank Fee and UNC students Jessica Hayes and Katie Ford Smith. Just ahead, the role of newspaper advertisers and how economic devastation affected media production during the Civil War. We'll talk about it on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. We are talking today about war reporting during the American Civil War. My guests are UNC students Jessica Hayes and Katie Ford Smith, and their professor Frank Fee is with us as well. He is at UNC's Journalism and Mass Communications Department. Frank, you were saying that journalism, newspapers had already started to become some kind of a business. How did the war affect the business of journalism?
Well, in a number of ways, and they were somewhat disparate. The as I said earlier, the interest in news was high, and there are drawings and descriptions of people in major cities lining up outside the newspaper offices to see the latest edition posted on a bulletin board of some sort. The problem, though, the paradox is that as interest in the war and the news spiked and over the period of the Civil War, in the South in particular, the ability to meet that demand really suffered because of shortages of cash, shortages of newsprint, paper in particular, shortage of men. Men were being conscripted or joining the army, and print shops were really hurting. Often they, in fact, repeatedly, we see notices in the paper saying we are shrinking the size of the paper because we can't get enough newsprint, and we are raising the price because we need money. And they stopped the practice of subscriptions for a year because the inflation rate was so fierce in the South that they would only sell subscriptions on a six-month basis.
Well, so resources are certainly a problem, but it is a business, and that means there's advertising. What did you see, Katie, in terms of advertising? Did it tell you anything about what was going on, about the war itself, or are ads always just ads?
Definitely. Advertisements during this time, you know, largely focused on the raw materials that were needed here at home in order to just survive war conditions. Jessica actually found this really interesting ad. I believe it was in the Hillsborough Recorder.
Well, tell us about that.
So right. She can tell you about that.
Well, a lot of the advertisements would run for multiple weeks at a time. Some of them, I would think the ones that could afford it, would even run for almost a year or so. And there was one ad that was for wool. And the title, I guess the headline of the advertisement was wool, 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 you know, wool with an exclamation point three times. And it ran for a while. And then all of a sudden in May, it switched from wool, wool to wool, wool, full. Someone had changed the W to an F, an apprentice trickster, perhaps, a prank. And it ran for 2 weeks in that way before someone caught it and eventually changed it back.
Wow. Did any of the how about the reporting itself? You mentioned the fact that we know shortly after the war, the telegraph lines between the North and South are cut. is the reporting different, southern reporting different than northern reporting, Frank?
Well, I think one of the things we saw, and it's hard to generalize, but I think one of the things we noticed was that the southern reporting was a lot more passionate, a lot more politicized. And to that extent, there are reports that the northern papers that did make it down to the south from Philadelphia, Baltimore, New York, were considered more reliable. And so there was a lot of passion in the southern reporting that sometimes kind of masks some facts.
Is it so those papers were getting down here and people were interested in reading northern papers?
Not necessarily reading northern papers, but reading perhaps more accurate reports that northern papers were more likely to get, being closer to the front lines and just having better resources.
What kind of graphics did we see during the war?
Well, our class looked specifically at the New York Herald and the New York Times, and they did a lot of graphics in terms of showing battle maps, troop movement, things that we probably definitely wouldn't see today in our own newspapers. But the, like I said, battle maps, just outlaying where specific troops were at a certain point and what they're, and even you see some kind of suggestion, even by newspapers, of what the next move would be.
Well, how timely was it? Were they able to use the telegraph reliably?
They were sometimes quite timely. Again, the dailies would have the natural advantage, and you have to remember that the most of the newspapers published north and south during this time, but particularly in the south, were either weeklies or semi-weeklies. So the news didn't travel quite so fast. But at the same time, they were collecting news from a lot of places. They got it from the telegraph. They got news from the battlefield from letters written by soldiers. And they also, you see every so often, a reference to the news by from people who arrived by cars last night, in other words, the railroad. And so you have this eyewitness element as well coming into play. So there's a lot of different ways. And then finally, as Katie and Jessica have pointed out, the exchange press, the practice of clipping a news story from one paper and reprinting it was a very important transmitter.
Jessica, do you get a sense that there's much or what kind of reporting was there about the home front during the war?
I would say that the reporting was sometimes biased.
Mm-hmm.
The South, especially, like Frank was, our professor was saying, that they weren't always accurate, mm-hmm. and so it was kind of difficult to believe everything that you read and to be sure that it was the truth.
And what was the proportion of home front news to battle? I mean, were the papers pretty much all taken up with the war?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, because one of the things that is always kind of fun to see is that in the midst of all this Sturm und Drang, you have a front page article on how to grow better turnip. And it illustrates one of the concerns that the South in particular had, which was food and crops that would benefit the war effort, or in fact benefit the people at the home front, who were in many places really suffering.
Was there a lot of reporting? Did the papers make use of letters from soldiers and, you know, sort of letters to home, that kind of thing?
Yes, they did. A lot of local soldiers would write back to their families, and that would somehow make its way into the press room. You found a lot of soldiers actually thanking Orange County women for organizing and sending supplies to the front lines. You also found eyewitness accounts, like from the Battle of Fredericksburg, that explained either, oh, it was a Confederate beating, you know, and then it would sort of, even the standard, the North Carolina Standard, which was Holden's paper, ran a couple of eyewitness accounts from Union soldiers explaining what had happened during the Battle of Fredericksburg. But then, though that seems an objective move by Holden to report both sides of the story, he would always tend to qualify himself by saying, Oh, but they also, Union soldiers also admit that they took a big whipping. So
yeah, you had to get that in there to sell the local paper. What about the proliferation of newspapers? It was a big 4 years for the newspaper industry.
This is another paradox. Again, with this enthusiasm for news and high interest in news, at the same time that the resources to put newspapers out are really falling apart. And yet when you look at the figures for the number of newspapers published in Raleigh, for instance, in 1861, there were six. And in 1861, there were two being published in Hillsboro. And Chapel Hill would not have a newspaper until after the war. But in 1862 and 3, the number of Raleigh papers remains at around six that we know of. But by 64, there are 10. And by 65, there are 13 in Raleigh. So they were finding the way to get in, onto the presses and into the streets, but it was a tough sled for them.
Well, and did they more or less stay in business? In other words, did this become a real boost for the industry?
Some did, but many did not. One of the things, of course, that had an effect on the number of newspapers in Raleigh or the types of newspapers in Raleigh being published was the arrival of Sherman's Army, which promptly put out of business the Confederate and some of the others that were supporting the government, the Confederate government. Holden, of course, is already been identified as a peace movement person, a leader, and he will become governor under the Reconstruction program and be also the first governor anywhere impeached and removed from office.
So you've got this industry that kind of waxes and wanes, but it gets a big boost. During the Civil War, the technology is changing. What kind of access did reporters have to information about the war during the Civil War?
Well, one of the main points of access was in getting to commanders on the battlefield. And these commanders had great control over the press. They could control whether they could get access to anybody to talk about the battles or the situation. They could control the telegraph. And generals North and South were known to be particularly anti-press. Sherman actually court-martialed a New York Herald reporter, I believe it was. And the Beauregard and some of the other Confederate generals were no more open to the press. So there was this access that was obtained by going to the commanders, essentially. But they could also roam around. They could talk to the troops and would come back with reports that looked at the life from a different perspective.
Is this a fundamentally new experience, the idea? I mean, certainly there were people reporting on wars before this, but I can't imagine in the same numbers. Was it a new experience for battlefield commanders to have this kind of interest?
It really was. It really was. Although I haven't studied it a lot, the Mexican War had a lot of news value, a lot of news interest, but it was done so remotely that it was very hard to sustain what was available to sustain the Civil War press. There would be it would come by ship, and then it would hit the telegraph in New Orleans, but it was a very limited access, and so the reporting just wasn't there.
What about, I know that you, Frank, are well-versed in the history of the black press in America. Did you find evidence of any official reporting of the war within the African-American community?
Not really. Not in this particular area. As a matter of fact, Jessica, had, in some of her work in advertising, noted that there were still ads for slaves going right through in the Hillsboro Recorder. There was not a whole lot of change in terms of the local press at that point.
Here. Now, what about up north?
Up north, there would have been, yes. One of the other great journalists of the era, Frederick Douglass, who had been an escapee from slavery and had only 10 years later was suddenly editor of his own newspaper, maintained his newspapers up until 1863, but by that time he was very much involved in raising black troops, and he had two sons in the Massachusetts 54th Regiment, which is the famous regiment portrayed in the movie Glory. Right. And he and other editors who had been active in the black press prior to the war really kind of shifted their interest to getting participation in the war for African Americans. And so that campaign would be a news item for sure.
Jessica, do you get a sense of how and whether or not the press was influential in terms of its ability to, first of all, inform, but then on popular opinion during the war?
I would definitely say that it was influential, especially in Raleigh with Holden's paper, The Standard. It was so politically charged compared to The Recorder. So everything that he said had a very opinionated tone. And
give us a sense, because he's such a complicated character. I mean, here's somebody who opposes secession. He becomes the first governor in Reconstruction. He's going to be impeached. He leads a war against the Klan. So, but on the other hand, he's supporting this war once we're in it, and he's very anti-union as well. A very complicated guy, right, in his reporting. What do you sense from reading? What's the tone of his paper? It's certainly not pacifism while the war is going on, right?
Right. Well, I think we talked about before we came on how Holden was an opportunist, and so his opinion really reflected what I guess he felt was the most opportunistic thing at the time. So.
You definitely have to consider that Holden had an agenda, and his paper had an agenda. One of the issues that our group sort of grappled with was whether or not the press influenced what the public was reading, or if the public influenced what the press was reporting. And, you know, you find that it was sort of this mixed mutual relationship of how they reported the news and what kind of commentary. A lot of the time, Holden responded the way in which he felt readers would want to hear him. And then also towards the end of the war, you find him, you know, his press room suffered a raid in 1863. By Confederate troops. And after that point, he was pretty much leading the peace movement. But it does say something as to the tenacity of the press, and that they did, Holden at least, did realize his position as a powerful influence in North Carolina politics. So.
Frank, how would you assess that in general, the influence of the press during this period?
Well, I think in general it kept the dialogue going, essentially, which was really important. We see in the content, for instance, that even though there was loyalty to the Confederacy, there was a lot of criticism of President Jefferson Davis. There was a lot of criticism of the way the war was being carried out by the Confederate government. And so even within the so-called loyal press, there is a lot of division and criticism of what's going on. In terms of effects and influence, that's always a really tough question to measure in history. We don't have public opinion polls that we can turn to and really measure this. But it's important to note that as much as Holden may be seen as a maverick, he had a base. And there were a lot of people who felt like Holden, and in this area at least. So, as I say, overall, I think we see the dialogue being kept alive and a lot of free exchange of ideas, some pretty wild ones, some pretty measured and logical ones.
Well, let me ask your students if they see anything different. Jessica, when you study the Civil War now and you've seen it through this lens, does it give you a different perspective on the war?
Absolutely. I guess I had studied the Civil War before this class, but this just was so much more in depth, and especially looking at it through the newspapers and through Chapel Hill newspapers was a completely new experience, and I'm really glad that I was able to look at it.
What about you, Katie? What's different for you?
I think just sort of realizing where the business of journalism found its path, even in times of struggle, provides us all who are studying it today a belief that we can come through the challenges that we're facing, you know, in a digital age. You see, even today in journalism, the remnants of the press evolution during the Civil War, we still hold on to the modern inverted pyramid style that was created back then, which reports the most important news at the top of a story. And you still see editors who do believe and have this mission to report national news for a local audience. Most of the North Carolina papers during this time were able to give a list of casualties during the war that were specific to local counties. And that really sort of highlighted, for me at least, that they could create, even this broad generalized war could create some kind of sense of informing a local audience. So.
I'll be giving a talk tomorrow at Wilson Library at 3 o'clock if I make a shameless plug. It's a gallery talk, and I'm going to be talking about the research and particularly the display that they have. But there's a letter in that that I love, which kind of speaks to the interest in news as well. It's a professor at the school writing to his wife, and essentially he describes the arrival of the paper that comes down. They're getting morning papers delivered from Richmond and Petersburg to Chapel Hill by 8 o'clock at night, and they sit on the front porch and somebody reads the newspaper to the crowd, and it's a nightly event. Really fascinating.
Well, I want to thank you all very much. Frank Fee, an associate professor of journalism and mass communications at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and his students Katie Ford Smith and Jessica Hayes joined us as well. We're going to talk more with Frank and talk about an exhibit and a blog now to keep the Civil War alive. On the state of things, please stay tuned.